listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
England have made it at least into a playoff as they prepare to take on Poland at Wembley for the last hurdle to get themselves into Brazil 2014. The USA do A-OK once again, and it's the big A, Jozy Altidore, firing on all cylinders to give them a 2-0 win against Jamaica last Friday. And there's plenty of World Cup action to get into as we get the final places almost booked up and the flights ready for the World Cup next year. Welcome to Monday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the important views from around the world of football. There was plenty of international action this weekend, and we're going to keep it all nice and local here on World Football Daily to kick off the week. Joining me later on will be, of course, Rafa Gonzalez, but we're going to be talking a little bit of England, a little bit of US men's national team. And there's no better man to talk a bit of US men's national team with than the one, the only, the Ginge himself, Mr. Zach Woosley, will be joining us here in just a minute or so to talk to us about that victory for the US men's national team against Jamaica. It wasn't important, of course, and there are some changes to the squad coming up for the next game against Panama. A big game for Panama, of course, as they look to try and knock off Mexico, who incredibly got a 2-1 win in the Azteca. A fantastic win, and done in some style by Jimenez as well, with the bicycle kick in the last minute in order to give Mexico that final chance to get themselves at least into the playoff spot for Brazil 2014. England, of course, with that great 4-1 win against Montenegro. Apparently, Andros Townsend is the next best thing since sliced bread suddenly here in the UK. Everybody is talking about his performance and his fantastic strike. And some people have almost threatened to say the three words that I hate the most, the golden generation. Once again, people saying that this isn't, at the moment, it's just a good crop of young players. But the golden generation phrase has been alluded to on a number of times in the last few days. And I've got to say, I'm not looking forward to hearing about this later on. We're going to break down that England side that played Montenegro and look at the flaws and the positives of a side that is packed with youth at this moment in time. And it's great to see the changes ringing through the England squad. But let's just be wary before we start using phrases like golden generation and throwing them around again. More on that later on the show. But today, I have to say, and I'm delighted to say, that we do have our guest ready and waiting for us on the line today. He is a man to talk all things US men's national team and Spanish football expert as well, from SBNation.com. He is the one, the only, the Ginge, the Ging, as Raf likes to call him. It is Mr. Zach Woosley joining us here on the show today to talk about the US men's national team victory against Jamaica. Zach, pleasure to have you back on board, mate. How are you doing today?
Well, it's kind of rainy here where I am, but and it's a Monday. But other than that, I'm going pretty well.
Oh, and surely the sun is shining in your heart, at least, after another sterling performance by the U.S. men's national team over Jamaica.
Well, I wouldn't call it sterling, but it was a win. And they continued their fairly positive form. It was easily their worst performance of the last couple of rounds. But considering they'd already made it into the World Cup, there wasn't anything much left to play for. Yeah, a letdown's expected. But you know what? In the end, they ground out a result. And sometimes it's just as important how you grind out those results and get the ugly wins as you do when you can look pretty and look aesthetically pleasing doing it. So, you know, from that point of view, it's positive. They got a win. They continue to play well. And they're moving forward. So that's what's important.
Was it really that frustrating a victory for you, Zach, whilst you were watching it? What made it so agonizing?
It wasn't really agonizing or frustrating. It was just, you could just tell in the first half that they just didn't really have a whole lot of ideas. I think a lot of it was down to the fact that I think Donovan shouldn't have played. I think his ankle was bothering him more than he was letting on, and he tried. He gave it a go. There's nothing wrong with that, but you know, I think that kind of hindered him, because you saw once he came off and they switched out how the play was going and where the ball was moving through the team, they improved vastly in the second half. And I think you saw a team that looked a lot better. So from that point of view, as dull as the first half was, it was nice to see them rebound in the second half and play well. So it wasn't too frustrating. It wasn't upsetting. It was just, you know, it wasn't anything particularly, you know, spectacular. But they got the job done. And like I said, sometimes that's more important. And I think, like I said, a lot of it came down to Donovan. I just don't think he was quite at 100%. And I think they kind of struggled to sort of move their attack and set up their offense in the first half. But when he went out, it changed. And you saw a team that looked a little more settled and a little more comfortable.
There was a lot of talk about Landon in going into the game. Well, I say a lot. There was obviously discussion about whether he should even be in the U.S. men's national team set up at all. Bruce Arena wanted him back with the L.A. Galaxy. No surprise then, considering the injury obviously still aggravating, to see him and a handful of other players making their way out of this U.S. men's national team as the second game comes up in this international break. Is Bruce Arena, though, going to be a little unhappy with the U.S. men's national team for playing a not fully fit Donovan and possibly even aggravating that injury even more?
Is a club coach ever happy with the national team? it's like soccer tradition for us, for coaches to get upset about what happens to the national team. I think Bruce has a legitimate beef, though. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, that will probably get some shtick from people who will say, well, you know, Bruce, you always complain, you always want. But I think this point may have a legitimate case. I mean, Donovan was not at 100% when he left the Galaxy. He knew it, and I'm sure U.S. Soccer knew it, but they played him anyways. Now, Arena can whine and complain all he wants about Klinsmann, but the bottom line is that he should also get on Donovan's case a little bit, because Donovan's been around the block. He's a professional. He understands how this works, and he also understands this game wasn't that important. So if Donovan is in there saying, telling Klinsmann and telling the staff, I can go, I'm okay, then he bears responsibility. Now, I don't know. We don't have the inside track on that. No one's really said. But I think there's some potential blame to go around. Arena will probably, I would think, publicly, you know, go after U.S. Soccer a little bit. That's what you do. But I think maybe internally he might get on Donovan a little bit and say, what did you do that for? Why did you play? And especially if it becomes a long-term issue, because, you know, we don't know how bad the injury is yet. If it's something that keeps Donovan out for the rest of the regular season, that's bad. If it potentially knocks him out for the playoffs, that's even worse for L.A. He's a guy that they rely on.
Now, you mentioned that obviously it was maybe slightly flat-footed because the USA have already booked their place into Brazil 2014. But going into the game against Panama tomorrow, this will still be a home form run that they'll want to continue and want to keep winning in general, just to keep the winning mentality about. Do you like the fact that four key players have kind of departed the squad? It gives them maybe a fresh chance, a bit of fresh change, but also it takes away some experience. What are your thoughts on it, Zach?
It's an eternal balance. If this was a month before the World Cup, if we were in March, April, May, going into the next summer, I probably would feel differently. I would probably want to see everybody there, unless they were just generally injured and couldn't play. But there's always going to be an argument between the importance of form at an international level and the importance of having your best players out there and having healthy guys out there. If the U.S. were still needing to qualify, I would want Klinsmann to have everybody on deck and the best possible group there. That's what you want him to do. That's what his job is. His job's to win. Now, it doesn't mean that he should go out and throw these games, but it doesn't mean he shouldn't take them seriously. But at the same time, this is one of those last opportunities, I think, for him to maybe just run a few guys through and say, give guys a last chance, take a last look at a couple of fringe guys, because you got to figure that Klinsmann probably is comfortable with at least 18 to 20 of the guys that he wants to take to Brazil at this point, barring any injury issues. So you figure at best three spots, maybe a couple spots open for guys to grab going into next summer. So, you know, there's an opportunity there. And I understand some of the statements. You know, he wanted to make sure he puts the best team forward. He wants to put on a show. He wants to make sure people buy the tickets, get what they pay for. But at the same time, I think it's also an issue of, you know, maybe he should pay a little more attention to the fact that MLS is in the playoff stretch. And while you can argue, and I certainly will, that you know, shouldn't be playing games right now, you know, sucking away players from MLS teams at key moments isn't the best. the problem is with the debate is you can go any one number of any directions, and I think everybody has a point. But for me at this point with the Panama game, the real motivation for the Panama game, I think, is more on the fan side, because the fans realize potentially they could help maybe keep Mexico out of the playoff, although I think with their win, I think Mexico will probably squeak in now into that playoff against New Zealand. But for the player standpoint, you know, if they feel like keeping winning and keeping going, that momentum is important and vital to their success, then I mean, by all means. But I personally would think it'd be a better chance to see a little more new faces, a chance to get a few guys from run out and maybe having them playing. Just use the opportunity, because you have limited international games left between now and Brazil. So why not take that chance to see a few more guys?
It's going to be a difficult evening in Panama, because there is, as you say, Panama still fighting to go at least to that playoff spot. Mexico with that win, obviously, in the Azteca on the Friday night. Who's going to be lost out of these four, do you think, the most in a game which the opposition will be up for and will really be gunning for the US men's national team? Who out of the four who have gone, Jones, obviously, Besler, Howard and Donovan, is going to be missed?
You know, with Brad Guzan coming in and playing goal, most likely, I think that's fine. That's not going to be a huge drop off for him. Of all of them, I think you probably could make a case for Jones, only because he's become such a vital part of the midfield. Beasley's loss is pretty decently impactful too, because he's looking like he'll probably could be end up being that starting pairing and one of those guys that's going to be in the central defense. I think between those two, that would probably be my vote. Donovan's loss, because of the fact he was hurt and didn't play well, and because of the fact that they've got other guys that are able to step in and play that role to a certain extent, I think they'll be okay. So I'd say probably at this point, Jones or Beasler would be your most impactful losses. I think you can probably cover for Beasler a little better, but we'll have to see what Klinsmann does. And to be honest, against a Panama team that's going to be so motivated, you may end up having to say Beasler, because I think the defense is going to be absolutely bombarded, and rightfully so. And Panama desperately needs points, so they're going to throw everything forward and press and try to score as many goals as they can, because they need to somehow hope that Mexico doesn't win, but also make sure that they try to keep any goal differential issues in case they do end up tying. So, you know, defensively could be the biggest issue.
Last couple on the US men's national team, Zach, because I do want to ask you a quick couple about Spain as well. Obviously, you are a Spanish football expert, of course, who we've had on the show before discussing La Liga. But when it comes to this forward line of the US men's national team, obviously, Jose Altidore continues that great run, always has got a great scoring form for the US men's national team. What have you made, though, of Aaron Johansson coming into this side, the young AZ Alkmaar striker who many people are liking partnering Altidore because of the chemistry between the two that's already been seen, I guess, at club level slightly, and obviously at the US men's national team level already?
Yeah, it's been a refreshing sort of combination. No one's ever questioned Josie's raw ability, and we finally, after a long stretch, have seen him starting to perform at the national team level, and it was nice to see him play pretty well for overall in this game against Jamaica, because he's had such a rough time now again at club, just moving to Sunderland with the coaching changes and everything else. But you know, at least he's playing. But the trick has always been, what are you going to do? How are you going to play off of him? And there hasn't been a great option. You know, Dempsey doesn't really fit that role completely, though he could do it. Donovan can do it and has. Klinsmann shown a liking to play him a little more forward sometimes. But I think Johansson's a good option. Whether or not he's going to be the guy going into Brazil, it's hard to say. I think he'll need to keep his club form up and continue to do the right things in Klinsmann's eyes. But at worst case, I think he's a guy that you can definitely make a case for being a very positive potential addition to the roster, because at least worst case, if he's not starting, he gives you a change of pace, a different style of player off the bench. And then if you need to play a different system, you want to try something, try to exploit a team you're playing, he gives you something different that the U.S. team hasn't really had. And so I think people are right to be excited about it, but at the same time, you know, you got to take a little bit of a deep breath and a step back, because we've seen young guys come in, make a little bit of a splash, and then it sort of settles in and they just kind of fizzle out a little bit. Hopefully he doesn't. We'd like to see him be very much more effective. But I think the signs are that he could be something very positive and a very useful type player for Klinsmann to have in his toolbox.
Is he too young to take to the World Cup just yet?
People have talked about that, and I think there is a point that where a player might be too young in terms of experience. But Johansson has is young, but he's getting experience. He's playing for his club. He is playing at the national team level. He's been in games. And that, for me, is what's important. If he was just coming into camp and maybe making the bench and never playing, then maybe you say, well, he hasn't really experienced it. Maybe you're not comfortable with it. But he's getting game time. And unless he does something just nutty and just suddenly, you know, shows off this streak of horrific immaturity that we aren't seen yet, then maybe you make the case. But if the guy's playing, if the coach is comfortable with him and he feels like he's going to use him, I think there's no such thing as too young. But if you're just taking the guy because you're just trying to fill your roster, then you know maybe that you can use your option better.
And what about Mexico? Before we get into Spain, just quickly, Zach, have they turned the corner? Do you think? I mean, an emphatic way to get a victory against Panama, leaving it late. Jimenez's incredible bicycle kick, but is the manner of that victory maybe as important in the fact that they were able to salvage something so late at the end and in such emphatic style as well?
It may be that kind of win that they can ride for one more game. And because it's only one more game, I think it can have an effect, and it's immediately a couple of days later. Because really what you saw from Mexico is a team that really has a lot of the same problems. It's not like suddenly that the new coach and a few changes, including bringing back Rafa Márquez, has suddenly made everything better across the board. They still have the issues, but they finally won at home. And like you said, they did it in an emphatic way, scoring just a spectacular goal. And that's the kind of thing I think they needed more than anything else. They needed that emotional charge, and that should be enough to get them through. I would be honestly at this point shocked that they didn't get the result they needed to get into the playoff, and then they'll have to go and deal with New Zealand, and that should be something that you say on paper they can deal with. But, if that game obviously hadn't gotten that goal, you know, we'd probably be ready to write Mexico off or wanting to, if we're, you know, the real hardcore U.S. fans who just love to hate Mexico, we'd want to write them off. But because of the way they won that game, you get the feeling that that's going to give them enough of a push to get over the hump and take care of business and get into that playoff.
For the Spanish national team, obviously their place pretty much booked in for Brazil 2014, although France can still just about win that group ahead of them, but it will take an absolute miracle. Spain in control of their own destiny. But needless to say, were you a little surprised, despite the lack of pressure around the Spain side, that Casillas hit the bench this week, that we have Victor Valdez coming in? And what does that do for Casillas' confidence to have lost the starting job, obviously, at Real Madrid, and to now not be 100% sure of getting a start, even in a World Cup qualifying game like this?
Well, Casillas, I don't necessarily think he'll lose confidence. I think he's going to, more than anything, just be quietly frustrated. This is a guy that has played at the highest level. He lifted a World Cup. He's lifted a European Cup. So he knows what it takes to win big games. He knows he's capable of playing still. And I think more than anything that this is going to have implications from Real Madrid, because I think he's going to start to put pressure on them quietly behind the scenes to move him. Because I think he wants to play, and you don't blame him. I mean, he has every right to be playing. He's in the prime of his career. For him to be sitting on the bench is ridiculous. The change for Spain this time, I think it makes sense on paper. I mean, Casillas hasn't been playing. He's been sitting on the bench, and that doesn't mean he couldn't come in and play well, but he's just been sitting there. And Valdez has been playing out of his mind for Barcelona. In fact, Barcelona is where they're at right now, in large part due to the fact that Valdez has kept them in some games until they could pull away late. So he's been playing fantastic, and his form deserves a start. And at the international level, I'm always been a proponent of a manager or coach looking at it and saying, look, I have to pick the guys that I know have consistently performed for me, but at the same time, sometimes I have to go out and say, this guy is playing well, it's a hot hand, and you go with that. And I think it was a smart move, because you never know. You know, what if Casillas has a bad game because he hasn't been playing? What if he hurts himself early and they got to make a sub? You know, those are the kind of doubts in your mind. I think it was the right move. It worked out for them, and you can question it to the end. But anything, I think more, like I said, it's going to put pressure for Casillas to want to get out of Madrid, because I think he's going to want his spot back. But to do it, he's going to have to play. And it doesn't look like he's going to be playing at Madrid anytime soon.
Zach, we will have to keep an eye on, obviously, the Spanish national team as they look to cement their place into 2014 Brazil. And Andong Iker Casillas, I can't imagine seeing him in any other colours apart from Real Madrid, so it'd be insane to think of him being somewhere else. But for the time being, we will have to step back into a bit of Spanish football with you later on in the next few months or so. But for now, mate, we really appreciate you joining us here on WFD to have a chat about all things US men's national team and a little bit of Mexico and Spain as well, my man.
It was my pleasure. I always enjoy joining you guys, and have a good one.
And you too, my man. Zach Woosley there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things US men's national team. You can find Zach on Twitter at GingFC, capital G, capital F, capital C, all one word. That's at GingFC, and obviously you can find Zach's writing on SBNation.com/soccer, giving us a roundup of the US men's national team victory. I thought it looked comfortable, to be honest. I've managed to see the game. It may not have been pretty, but I thought it was solid and a very comfortable victory, I thought. I don't think there was any chance of the US national team losing that game against Jamaica, and I think there was just a case of we will eventually score. They left it late. Graham Zusi and Josie Altidore getting the goals for the US men's national team as they got their 2-0 win. They take on Panama tomorrow night. Panama without their destiny in their own hands after losing to El Tri. That fantastic Jimenez bicycle kick late on in that one, just a few minutes from time, giving Mexico a 2-1 win in the Azteca. But a big thank you there to the Ging, as Rafa likes to call him. Of course it is the Ginge, Mr. Zach Woosley there talking to us today on WFD. Talking to me now, of course, as always, is the big Raf man. Raf, how was your weekend? Of course, I'm sure you were very pleased by the comprehensive and comfortable performance that the US men's national team put in. I know you're not a Josie Altidore fan, but he's scoring again. And Graham Zusi getting on the score sheet as well. Nice to see him and continuing.
Super sub Zusi.
Well, and continuing that form from last year. You know, everybody said, will there be a sophomore slump in kind of 2013? He had such a stellar 2012. And that 2013 has continued to be great for Graham Zusi.
I wonder how long Zusi is going to be staying in the MLS. Because I do feel like he's got a lot more to offer. And I think that if he really kind of puts himself out there and challenges himself, he could be playing in some really high level of competition, Juice. He's very much so impressing me. Like you said, there's no sophomore slump. He's kind of maturing along with the international level of play. He's obviously doing it in league form as well. Very impressive. Also, real quick, speaking of Graham Zusi, with them doing it on that Friday in Kansas City, congratulations to Kansas City, who have just secured their playoff berth.
Yeah,
so congratulations to them. I mean, they're obviously doing everything right? I mean, it's strange. I know two players who have played under Peter Vermees and have not necessarily liked the coach, his style, and generally the man. But it's, I mean, it's really hard to understand that. I mean, it's almost got to be something a little bit personal, I'm thinking, because one, getting inducted into the Soccer Hall of Fame, I think this year. Two, he's like gone like 12 straight seasons with Sporting Kansas City in the playoffs. I mean, the man is like a, it's literally a legend in MLS. So he's like, Sporting Kansas City, to me, have to be doing something right.
Well, you know me, I'm always going to be kind of siding with my Pacific Northwest kind of sides in Major League Soccer.
Did you catch the game this weekend?
I did not, unfortunately. I wasn't able to see. I saw the US men's national team, but I've not caught much of Major League Soccer. But the Portland Timbers toppling the Sounders. I mean, worrying result again coming in against a playoff-bound team, you know?
I told you. When it really matters, when the heat is really on and the pressure is really kind of mounting on those shoulders, Juice, and you need some real strong shoulders to kind of carry that load, they don't have it, man. I can't explain why. But this is the same reason why you will see. And I mean, credit to Portland, who have kind of, you know, matured over the last couple of years, and I mean, especially bounced back from a terrible, terrible season last season.
Oh yeah. Massive disappointment,
big time. And they are really, really kind of maturing themselves here in the league. They could, I mean, the potential there for a, you know, an international kind of competing team right there, you know, going to CONCACAF Champions League. I would be so interested to see what would happen with a Mexican team coming to Jeld-Wen Field and experiencing our atmosphere, our kind of rowdies, our fans that are our fanaticos, man. I mean, it's just
they do it in Seattle. Very exciting times. They do it in Seattle, though. I mean, Seattle is arguably the noisiest ground in Major League Soccer because of the size.
They do, but obviously it's not enough. Or the Mexicans and anyone else who comes up generally feels, you know, unthreatened, and they get decent results there.
Do you think the closeness of
Jeldwyn
will absolutely. It makes a bigger impact? Because what's it? I can't remember what it's known as now. It was Quest Field, though, wasn't it, back in the day?
Well, it's Xbox Field, and that's Quest. And it's Quest State or
Qualcomm Stadium as well at one point or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, the Sounders ground. I mean,
it's a football stadium.
That is a football stadium, and it is very open. You know, American there's the roof stadium. down the side and whatnot, but it doesn't feel like you're packed in tight. Like whenever I see it on TV, and it might be completely different when you're at the game, and generally but on TV it looks a much more open, obviously a giant stadium, and it's full, which is great, but it does look more open, like the atmosphere can escape upwards slightly. I mean, at Portland, it just feels, especially with kind of, you know, guys on the sideline with chainsaws cutting a bit of a log when they score and stuff like that, combined with like the intense noisy atmosphere, and people just look like proper crammed together down there. I mean, it looks like the fans are right on top of the pitch there, and really it makes an insane atmosphere for viewing it on television, I have to say. I mean, we've always said on here that the Pacific Northwest is just paving the trail for people to follow in terms of how to get a football ground atmosphere going in Major League Soccer. It's something impressive. I'd love to go up there and see some games. Absolutely love to.
Well, so I mean, that was a very interesting game. Basically, I was gonna say, let me tell you what happened in the Cascadia Cup kind of rivalry or whatever. Seattle wore soft. That's what happened. So there's your, like, you know,
down to ten men. I mean,
they're soft.
Come on,
I'm just gonna leave it at that. And I'm gonna let my statement prove itself. Also, congratulations to Mike McGee, our boy Mike McGee, who's just been lighting it up for Chicago Fire. They had a big 3-2 big. We're going into MLS stuff, just fluid style. I like it today, Jews. Yeah. Anyways, so Mike McGee bagged a nice goal, but his teammate Jahlil Anibaba, I only remember this. Well, I mean, it was a decent strike, okay? If you haven't seen it, Jews, go online, MLS.com. You know, they have all those great videos. I'm sorry, I feel like my voice is just terrible today, Jews. I feel like the congestion
in my
nose.
You are sounding blocked up, man. You are sounding stuffy today, I have to say.
Anyways, go check out the Jahlil Anibaba wonder strike, as the Chicago Fire kind of put it. And let me know what you think about it. I thought it was a decent strike, but it's not like it's a crazy, I don't know. It's no, just go see it, okay? But the one thing I really wanted to bring up to you today, Juice, the one thing that I really, really want to bring up to you today, and mainly because, you know, you see so much of this guy spending so much time covering Aston Villa. Brad Guzan recently somebody asked Jurgen Klinsmann about the changes being made to the U.S. men's national team squad. I'm sure you probably talked about this a little bit with Zach, but you know, a lot of changes were made. Obviously, Tim Howard is gone. They sent him home, but Brad Guzan is basically going to be getting the start, right?
Yeah,
he's our number two. Jurgen Klinsmann is quoted in saying Brad Guzan has deserved the opportunity to start this game against Panama. Now, maybe I'm just reading too much into this as, like, you know, an American who generally speaks English as a first and, well, really kind of only language. I speak a little bit of, like, a lot of languages, but not really. I'm not conversational.
You can get some basic stuff down, but not.
Yeah, but I get the basics, right? So, I mean, from what I'm getting is that, like, well, you know, he's been good, but not really good enough for like important matches. This Panama game, though, he's totally okay for that. Like, you're cleared to play the Panama game, Guzan. It's not like you're a top class like Howard. It's very important when Howard's in goal. But you know, we have to we have to be careful. We have to have, you know, really nothing to lose, I guess. That's kind of how I
feel sorry both for Brad Guzan and for Jürgen Klinsmann, because Klinsmann is having to... You cannot deny that Guzan has been an absolute revelation in the Premier League for the last kind of 18 months or so. I remember the night I was at Villa Park, the night that Given did his hamstring in against Manchester United. Guzan came in, wasn't able to stop Villa getting defeated, but put up a spectacular performance straight off the bench and was excellent since the whole time that Shea was out. Now, Shea came back into the squad. When Lambert came in, Guzan became the number one. And Guzan's been excellent for the last 2 years. There was a great stat that was he has had the second most number of touches than any player in that Aston Villa squad over the last 12 months to and season and a bit kind of thing. He has had more touches apart from, I think it's Matt Loughton, who's had more touches of the ball than Brad Guzan. He's the only player, all outfield players, not even Benteke has had as many touches of the ball as Guzan has had, which shows how much he has worked and used at Aston Villa. And now the trouble is for Klinsmann. Obviously, I feel sorry for Guzan because he's been spectacular with Villa, has been a key element of them staying up last season, and has been a very strong starter as always this season. What I feel sorry for Klinsmann for is that he has Guzan, who is working his behind off in a very poor Villa back line, really. It's maybe not this season, it's not as bad as last, but it has been, when Guzan's been playing the majority of his time in that Villa side, it has been a pretty shoddy back line. And now, people are kind of starting to say, oh man, maybe we should put Brad in, you know, he's pulled off all these great saves and stuff. And he's unfortunately got the tough task of having to decide, okay, do I take this slightly younger keeper, who is having an incredible time in his career at the moment, and if I take him, do I have to pull out a man who has been the US men's national team staple number one for so long, who is having a great start to the season with Everton in terms of goals conceded, who has been there time and time again for the US men's national team, and has this great record in between the posts for both club and country, a guy that's played at Manchester United that is hands down the Everton starting number one keeper, and a number one keeper in a side that are far superior to Aston Villa over the last 12 to 18 months. Maybe not at this point again, but we are yet to see whether Villa are kind of the young pretenders, if you will, at the start of the year, or if they are exactly what they look like they could be. And you can only have one goalkeeper, Raf. You know, it's not like these guys can split time. You can't have like Howard comes in for one World Cup qualifier, Guzan comes in for the other, and rotate it one on again, off again. Because as soon as a keeper gets into a streak, gets his confidence going, you are keeping him between those posts. What I think Klinsmann obviously means by this, it's not kind of when it's a big game, you know, we're going to go with Howard, but when it's a crappy game, we're going to put Brad in. Because, I mean, there is going to be an element of that. That has to come into it. But it's more of a case of Klinsmann said, you earned this start because at the end of the day, Brad, you are playing just as well as Tim Howard. And I want to kind of say that I want to show you that the only reason that you're not starting is because Tim is in this rich run of form. He is our number one keeper. But if we get the chance to play you when there is kind of, you know, there is no repercussion, where it's not going to dent Howard's confidence of us pulling him out of goal or anything like that, when we're already through, we want you to be the starting keeper in a game that still, in theory, means something as a World Cup qualifier. You know, and Guzan kind of got his chance during the World Cup qualifiers in that Costa Rica game, in the snow game. You know, I spoke to him after it when he got back to the UK, and he kind of said, I've never played anything like that before. It was unreal. It was incredible to represent my country in something like that. And he's shown that he can do it if the game is really of importance, as it was that night and that period. But at the same time, Howard's the number one. Howard is the US men's national team number one. He has been for so long. Klinsmann isn't going to change that, especially like months before a World Cup. Maybe after the World Cup, maybe that changes. But going into the World Cup now, he's not going to suddenly put Guzan as his number one keeper, regardless of the situation, unless Howard suddenly goes into meltdown mode. And that's unlikely.
I think that's your biggest selling point right there. And I think that's the only kind of real argument that you really had for me to not put Guzan as your start, because at this point I'm almost, you know, just completely on his bandwagon, to where I think that he is kind of the future. I think he does talk more, he has a better communication with his back line, and he's a better organizer of the game, really. So, I'm thinking that he is our better keeper at this point in time. And I think that we should, I mean, to maximize our potential, I think that we do go with Guzan. I mean, even going into this World Cup, I would have started him, you know, weeks ago, months ago, in our last round of World Cup qualifiers. But quick question, follow up to that kind of thought: can Guzan almost jeopardize his not his career, but his chances in the starting lineup or anything with this game? Like, could this be kind of like a hiccup game for him and the U.S.? I mean, you're obviously not sitting with your starters. You know, you could have a back line that is a little unfamiliar with themselves, and you know, he could be left out there to kind of, you know, be strung along, man.
This guy knows how to deal with a defense that's hanging him out to dry a bit. Let's not beat around that bush. He knows how to deal with a defense that isn't playing well. So I don't think this. Yeah, you know what? I was going to say, actually, because it was, you know, I was thinking this as I was kind of talking about it just a moment ago. Like, the one problem is that if Brad maybe comes into this game or any other game and has a shocker, you know, that is his chances of keeping up with the right. Tim Howard kind of thing, kind of heavily dented, because it will be. But in the same way that, you know, I think if Howard has an absolute shocker one game as well, then I don't think Klinsmann would hesitate to kind of say, Tim, look, you had a mess that one, okay, like a real bad mess. So we're gonna put Brad in for this one. We're just gonna get you sorted, get your head mental, get your head like mentally sorted out. We're gonna put Brad in for this one. And I think that I genuinely think Klinsmann would probably do that if Howard had an absolute shocker. But I do think, obviously, it's good. The onus is on Guzan to keep up with Howard, because he's number two. And if he wants to be number one, he's got to keep up and outdo Howard at some point. So, it's a big game for him. It is going to be a big game. And he's going to be going in there, you know, feeling just as nervous and upbeat and pumped up for it as any other game. And I really hope Brad does well, man, because he's a lovely chap. And you know what? The US men's national team might as well finish off their World Cup qualification with a big performance against Panama as well. I mean, talk about home field advantage. It must be so nice for you guys, because you just look unbeatable in competitive games on home soil. Like, it's kind of unfair. It is kind of unfair, because when you think unbeatable on home soil in competitive games, and you think, like, okay, you're playing like Honduras, Panama, etc. Obviously, you have Mexico, but you know, if England were to say unbeaten on home soil in competitive games, and we included maybe kind of the World Cup tournaments where we end up getting like Italy or France in the qualification or something like that, you know, I think it's a little unfair. But I will give you the credit and say, look, unbeaten home soil competitive games, you're just storming it, Raf. I tip a hat to you on this Monday morning.
Fair enough. Okay, my last kind of U.S. soccer. I'm sorry. I feel like we made this a full, like, U.S. soccer.
Hey, let's make it USA Day, because I'm generally getting worried about the overconfidence that is already coming into the England squad. We'll talk about that in a second, though, man. Let's finish up the U.S. stuff.
Sure. Okay. So my last thing about U.S. soccer, and it's kind of way out there. Like I said before we even start recording, I got a couple good ones for you, Juice.
I would expect nothing less, Raf.
Okay, the New York Cosmos, dominating NASL, atop of the league by 7 points, looking to get their, I forget what they even call it, Juice. Hold on, Soccer Bowl. The Soccer Bowl berth. Is this hitting on any of your radars anywhere? Does this mean anything to you right now?
This doesn't come across to the UK, let's put it that way.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I was just wondering, because it's kind of interesting. I guess it's like a Monaco or, you know, a team in the second division over there, kind of.
Yeah, but there's no promotion, really, is there? So it doesn't pay. It's not like the New York Cosmos can win their way to Major League Soccer. They've still got to bid their way into Major League Soccer. So if you say like, oh, it's kind of like Monaco, it is to an extent, except that, you know, look, there are some okay players kind of in that side, of course. I mean, the one that stands out when you look at the roster is Marcos Senna, you know, who came in earlier this year. Is anybody that knows anything about Spanish football remembers Marcos Senna and how much he can just drill a ball from range. And used to, you know, one of those great long range strikers that if they
which Euro was it that he had like just an insane Euro for Spain?
Wasn't it the last one? No, not the last one. Sorry, yeah, the one before that wasn't it 2008.
Yes, I think so.
It must have been 2008 when he was absolutely smashing it in that Spain side. But I'm not sure it wasn't. I don't remember it being that big a role, to be honest.
I remember hearing his name all the time.
He was huge in that Villarreal side that did so well and almost went to the Champions League final. Maybe you're thinking of
that. Yeah, maybe.
But either way, you know, that's the kind of the name that stands out. That's their kind of, I almost want to say like poster child. That's their David Beckham at this moment in time, if you will.
Yeah.
But it's not the same. I'm desperate to see the Cosmos back in Major League Soccer because I think as an iconic brand of US soccer, I think it's hard to find anything else that sums up the history of US soccer, really. You know, they were that side back in the 70s, kind of 80s era that would just, you know, everybody knew what kind of, football fans globally knew who the New York Cosmos was, even if they didn't care about US soccer. They were thinking, they'd heard of the Cosmos in some way, shape or form, of course, because of Pelé, Cruyff, etc. But for them to be now down in that second division and with the New York Red Bulls and New York City in place in Major League Soccer, although New York City not yet playing in Major League Soccer, but that bid has been accepted, it looks very difficult for them to, A, grow into the New York market, and B, then be a third team in Major League Soccer in the New York market. You know, I mean, there are going to be fans in New York who will turn an eye away from the Cosmos in the NASL to look at New York City when they start playing in Major League Soccer, especially with the kind of possibility of what that bond between them and Manchester City can do. And there will be, and the Major League Soccer won't want, I don't think, a third team coming into the New York area when they've already got two big sides, especially if the Red Bulls continue to make this kind of late season charge that they've been on recently in Major League Soccer and, you know, start becoming a serious threat. I don't think I've ever really taken them too seriously as a MLS Cup's threat because they always then seem to finish the season kind of poorly and therefore you don't kind of get sucked into a wave of enthusiasm about the Red Bulls going into the playoffs. That's different this year. And I think you are thinking, oh, Red Bulls, man, this could be their year finally to live up to all the hype and to all the kind of stardom that surrounds them. Now, if you've got New York City as well in there, you know, I don't see Major League Soccer wanting to and allowing a third one to come in. And you can't have the New York Cosmos not be the New York Cosmos. They have to be. They're not. They can't be the Miami Cosmos. I mean, that would break my heart if Beckham's club ended up being kind of taking the franchising brand of the New York Cosmos and putting it in Miami.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that kind of suck to have?
I would have never thought about that, Jules, but that is a very, very interesting point.
It
makes you, like, the whole situation really makes you wonder because, I mean, ultimately, you can only make so much money. You can only bring in, such a caliber of players and raise your level of competition so far in that league, right? I mean, just
in NASL, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, because there isn't the, you know, the television funding from it or anything like that. You know, there isn't the hype and hysteria about it. You know, you're not going to have a Clint Dempsey joining the New York Cosmos, who really are the kind of, aside from the Puerto Rico Islanders that aren't in existence anymore. You know, that was the only other side that I can think of in NASL that really like rolls off the tongue when you think about those sorts of sides. And you're not going to have a Dempsey going to the New York Cosmos when he's got, you know, four or five great playing years left in him. He will go to a Major League Soccer side because the money's there, the TV money is there, and the advertising from television and the chance for sponsors to get his face out is there as well. Until NASL is backed by a serious media outlet in terms of broadcasting on television, there's not going to be that pulling power that to allow it to compete with Major League Soccer. That's why the Cosmos need to get into Major League Soccer if they get back into mainstream football again. And it's just not going to happen now. That was the saddest thing about the New York City franchise being approved, because it was like the end of the New York Cosmos dream pretty much for the near future until the league becomes so big that it can accommodate three teams from the New York area, or until the Red Bulls or New York City collapse.
Or Major League Soccer starts to implement, or you know, pulls in the NASL or PDL or whatever.
What, and legitimately
has a promotion relegation,
which will never happen because owners will never invest in second division clubs. There is no, unless people like the LA Galaxy, the New York Red Bulls, and co are coming to your stadium week in week out, it's too difficult.
Wait a second, Juice. What about you know, Major League Soccer in their 40th, you know, year or something? Like, it's almost got to happen, I think. Like,
it'll have to happen one day. The league can't expand to like a 30-team league or anything.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly. You're not going to have the NFL of. Maybe you can. I don't know. It seems really strange.
I think if they changed it like the NFL, you have mini divisions and whatnot.
Right.
I think.
Oh yeah, yeah. You have two leagues, and the, you know, AFC, NFC. Or I mean, I know that's what they're trying to do, sort of, with you know the West and the East. But it's yeah. I don't know.
I can't see the West and the East dividing up like that. I mean, and there'd still be the race for the supporters' shield, and that can't be considered a legitimate. It's barely. Noticed much anywhere around the league, but the Supporters Shield can't be carried on if every team isn't playing each other at least once, kind of thing. I mean, that's just not going to feasibly work, my man. Promotion and relegation is a very very difficult subject in Major League Soccer because however much you want it, you can't you can't even think about it from the owner's point of view. How great it would be for fans and for teams from the owners, they're not going to want to invest in a second division side. And owners that have previously invested in a top flight MLS soccer side will be so cheesed off as if their side gets relegated. You know, money could be pulled. It could leave the kind of state of Major League Soccer in a very fragile situation. By the way, we've already had a tweet into our Guzan or Howard tweet. And Johnny says, can Guzan be 1.5 instead of the number one? Oh, Johnny, no. Oh, Johnny, no, I'm afraid. Quickly, Raf, we had obviously the European qualifiers, England with that 4-1 win against Montenegro. I guess I should start dreaming for England to lose more because then they seem to play better and play some really nice attacking football. I don't know how much of you saw of the game, Raf.
I actually got to catch the majority of this game.
But I was so pleased, especially that second half performance, to see England come out and really just taking a game to a side. Andros Townsend's goal was, you know, absolutely fantastic. But the point I want to leave it on, I was talking about kind of, oh, everyone's talking about the new golden generation and whatnot already. I mean, nobody said golden generation, but there has been hints of, well, actually, no, this is a really good young crop of players. When you look at Danny Welbeck, Andros Townsend, Wayne Rooney, Daniel Sturridge, you know, we've got 4, 5, maybe 6 players in there that you suddenly start. And I'm like, no, everybody just pause, hit pause. Go back to the Ukraine game and remember what you were all saying about, you know, they don't look confident enough. They don't look like they've got the quality. They look boring. It looked bland. It was Hodgson's poor tactics. It was the players on the pitch that were playing badly. Can we just all just pause and take a breath and basically quickly analyse this England side and the side that started against Montenegro? Daniel Sturridge is young, but he is scoring goals at this moment in time. Let's not start getting too overhyped about him until he's done it for a season or two. But let's also enjoy what is happening right now as we watch Daniel Sturridge turn into a clinical striker.
You want to nourish that a little bit, don't you? You want to nourish that and let that grow some.
Yeah, you want to just do what you're doing. Leave him be. Let him get his head down. Let other people from other countries start saying, oh, Daniel Sturridge, he looks like he could be a really dangerous threat if he came to us. Don't start saying, hey, France, check out, we've got Daniel Sturridge. You are going to be so scared when you face him.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's almost like you guys kind of, you know, cut the legs out underneath
the
stars a little.
It's like we're Don Kings. We're trying to be Don King. We're trying to promote our fighters going into the fight. And everybody's kind of going, yeah, nice one, Don. You can promote them really well, but really, you don't. They ain't got anything to go with. Rooney, of course, hit and miss at the moment. He's in a really nice run of form and putting his head down and playing football is what we want to see. Danny Welbeck, again, you know, had a great first game of the season, then has kind of gone off the ball a bit. At Manchester United has been putting in solid performances with England. I do worry about him being out on the left flank. I just don't see Welbeck as being stuck on that left flank at all. I don't know what it is. I see him more as a centre forward. But
you know what though, Juice? Like I read it somewhere and I thought that this was kind of an interesting observation, is that England should be taking advantage of their pacey wingers and kind of, you know, should be maximizing the speed on their flanks and the attacking, you know, capability of your wings. Well, and playing up to that strength. And so, I mean,
that's why I don't understand Welbeck being there. I know Walcott's...
You don't think he's pacey and creative and someone who likes to, you know, bomb up the wings and attack?
I can imagine Townsend, and I know he was injured, but Townsend and Walcott looking far more intimidating than Townsend and Welbeck, or Walcott and Welbeck, in terms of raw pace and being able to get burst down a sideline and cause problems. I like the idea of Townsend being in there, but let's again, you know, wonderful goal on his debut.
Would you agree that you do got, or maybe you guys should be playing more to that strength of your wing play?
Yeah, why not? But at the same time, we do have, you know, Lampard and or Gerrard in the middle of the park as well, who can both do a job. I'm not saying that they are the greatest players England's ever had or anything like that, but I will say that, you know, Walcott isn't the ideal winger. I don't think he's got that crossing ability. Townsend is showing that he can be a very good player. But again, this is what I worry about this Andros Townsend goal. He scored a great goal, but it was against Montenegro. It was a fantastic finish and a great run, but let's not kind of Michael Owen this guy, you know? He scores one goal and go, oh my goodness, isn't he amazing? Oh, Andros Townsend shows on his debut. Look, it was great. He came in on his debut in a big game with a lot of confidence and played a great game of football and caused problems down that right flank. And I said last year that Tottenham were going to miss him when he went on loan to Queen's Park Rangers, and I think they did, as having a great backup in there. He's taking his game from strength to strength and is playing well in a Spurs side this season. Playing well for England is even better. But let's not jump on a bandwagon and put out these praise labels too early, because let's just wait and see what happens if he can hold a place down in the England squad and if he can maintain this form for both club and country again. Let's just slow down, park the bus on Sturridge and Townsend for a second and just enjoy watching them play some great football at the moment and say it's exciting, but let's not start putting labels on anything just yet. But I don't think we do still have the most accomplished flanks. What we do have is two great fullbacks in Kyle Walker and Leighton Baines, who started that game. Their ability to push forward and get on the overlap helps a lot. Especially it gives Welbeck that opportunity to maybe come inside a little bit more, hit one with the right foot, and Baines go down the sideline on the overlap. And they are both at the moment fit enough and young enough to be able to get up and down throughout a football game. So I will say that the flanks are strong, but I also think the centre of our midfield can be strong as well with the right tandem in there. And I was amazed. Lampard and Gerrard played okay together in the middle of the park on Friday night. They weren't perfect, but they played okay. But let's not start, as I said at the beginning of the show, putting the golden generation labels down on anybody just yet. A golden generation is something like Belgium, okay? That's a golden generation, okay? Where even though the Belgian FA have claimed that this was all kind of, we've kind of built up to this, Moussa Dembélé saying, this is just pure luck, but hey, well, it's lucky, we're going to ride this one. Like, this is great. Whatever it is, that's a golden generation. Let's not start putting that on England just yet. We've just got rid of that label. We've just started to realise that we're useless. There was a fantastic comment last week on a radio show here in the UK where they have, like, they ask journalist questions and they try and come up with like funny sporting answers type thing. So one was, who's been the most useful, useless player or useful, useless sports personality? And somebody said, well, the most useful, useless player England have ever had has been Emil Heskey. Because during the time of the golden generation, you know, it was Owen, Gerrard, Lampard, blah, 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 Beckham. And everybody used to say that it was Emil Heskey that was bringing the England team down. And then as soon as he left the England team, we all had to face the fact and realise that it wasn't just Heskey that was useless, but it was all of them. And for that reason alone, Emil Heskey was the most useful, useless player that England have ever had. And it's kind of true. We've just got rid of that label. Let's not start putting it again and then get finding ourselves with a new Emil Heskey to pin all the blame on for when it all goes wrong. Let's just leave it. Let's just keep it cool. And that's where we'll leave the show today as well. We have, of course, World Cup qualification coming up tomorrow on World Football Daily. We'll run through all the games on tomorrow's show. For now, though, I'm about to go and get ready for some Argentinian football tonight. It's going to be a late one for me, I think.
Who are you calling today? Who are you calling?
I'm doing the Llanos game, my friend. So, yeah, I'm going to be absolutely shattered. We will have to talk about the South American World Cup qualifiers as well, because Ecuador, with that big win, means that Uruguay are looking like they're going to have to go through the playoffs unless they can get 3 points against Argentina and Chile and Ecuador. One of them can stumble. We'll talk about South America and the rest of Europe tomorrow as well. Lukaku or Benteke? Have a ponder on that one. When you think of Guzan or Howard, Lukaku or Benteke is another very nice problem for a manager to have. Take care. Enjoy any football you can find this evening. As I say, there's some Argentinian on tonight, and we will see you at the same time tomorrow. Have a good one.